Hey everybody, this is Andy, aka Love Retro BTW, across Twitter, Instagram, and Twitch. I do a podcast every Saturday called Cafe BTW, a morning gaming podcast, a retrospective look at the wonderful world of retro gaming, from interviews to guests. Join us every Saturday, like a Saturday morning cartoon, starting at 8 a.m., 11 a.m. Eastern. Also, if you're on Twitter, please join the brand new retro gaming community, a place to share, connect, and show your love for the retro gaming community. All the links are down below. And remember, enjoy the Gamers Week podcast.
Coming up on Gamers Week podcast.
You know, it's funny about Bomberman 64 is I still remember the jingle from the commercial. It was done in the Spider-Man tunes, you know, like Spider-Man. But it was Bomberman, Bomberman, mass destruction across the land. 8 new levels to explore on Nintendo 64. Look out, here comes a Bomberman.
Wow, let's get an applause for RGB on that one.
So I got to ask you, what was it like drinking beer out of a Twizzler straw?
Dude, that sucked because it didn't work. You would think, because the hole in the Twizzler is big enough to get something through it, right?
Yeah, and we kept trying to like nibbling a little more and then like trying to like squeeze open the hole a little more, and it would just not work. My throat was killing me for like 2 days after because of how hard we're like trying to suck through it.
Right.
Have you tried the hot dog yet, though?
Nah. I know it's going to get to the point where we're going to have to do that.
All right. Are we ready to go?
Har.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay. Welcome to Gamers Week Podcast. Like the name says, we analyze the best, worst, and weirdest headlines of the past week in the video game industry. This is episode 38, and today is Wednesday, September 7th, 2022. I'm Johnny G Retro, and I'll be one of your hosts this evening. One of our hosts is actually out with the bubonic plague, so she will not be making an appearance this evening. But with me, as always, is one of my other co-hosts. And this guy always eats his meat so we can have the pudding afterwards. Ryan, how are you doing tonight?
I'm just feeling like another brick in the wall, man.
Tell me about it. We don't need no education.
I love that Blue is now experiencing medieval diseases.
Whatever we can think of, she probably has it. So filling in for Blue tonight is a very special guest. His name is Jim, and he is from Drink a Beer and Play a Game. So Jim, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and the Drink a Beer and Play a Game podcast?
Hey guys, well, what do you call it? First off, thank you for having me on. I've been looking forward to coming on here for a long time. Love the podcast. And our show, it is called the Power Hour Podcast, where basically, kind of along the lines of you guys, we pick some of the best gaming topics of the week, and we try to throw in some random beer ones as well, for obvious reasons. And we just kind of bullshit over all that stuff, give our opinions, most of the time right, sometimes wrong. Brian always blames me for that, but I host it with my, longtime friend, now brother-in-law, Brian, so that always makes for an interesting dynamic. Basically, we can't get rid of each other. And besides that, we take questions from our patrons, go over what we're drinking, what we've been playing for the week, and just random bits that we come up with. And that's on top of our normal videos that we've been doing on YouTube for too long, where we do like video game reviews, occasionally make up drinking games, top tens, all that good stuff.
So off the top of your head, what was the, do you have like a worst beer that you've ever reviewed?
Oh, yeah. Oh, easily. Yingling Light Beer. So Yingling Light Lager is actually really good. But Yingling Light beer itself is just absolute piss. It's terrible. And the worst idea we ever had was there was years ago, and we haven't been able to find it since. It was called Ghostface Killer. And it was.
I know this beer.
Yes, made with the ghost pepper extract.
Yep.
And so we were drinking like those. This was back before like wives and kids. So when we would meet up to do games, we'd be like going for 6 hours. And we were drinking Dos Equis the whole time. Then Brian's like, hey, let's try this, ghost pepper beer. I'm like, all right. So we split it, and I get like 3 sips in, and I'm just running to the bathroom. It wasn't even the heat. It was just like the worst combination I've ever had in my body at one time.
It's funny you say that. I had my dad try it, take a sip, and he was starting to convulse into hiccups because it was so hot.
Dude, it was brutal, and I haven't been able to find it since.
Yeah, it was probably, 6 years ago I ended up going with that. But yes, it is. It's a nightmare in a bottle, for sure.
Nightmare in a bottle. So that's typically what happens to me whenever I eat something spicy, is like I start hiccuping. But I can only imagine. So I like to eat spicy wings, but then I like to wash that down with beer. And beer does not do anything to calm that heat. So I think mixing those two together is a bad idea.
Well, I was actually, I did the one chip challenge last year for our patrons. Ooh. And before I was going to do it, I was like, yeah, I'll get that. I'll get a beer to go with it. And Brian's like, it's probably a bad idea. I was like, oh, really? For once, he bailed me out. He's like, yeah, just get some milk, stupid. And luckily he gave me that advice. Could have been way worse.
Well, thank you very much for taking your time to join us this evening and fill in for us. We really appreciate it.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Thanks again for having me on.
So let's move on to our reviews, reactions, and requests. Ben Magnet 27 says, oh, hey. At Writer's View and I have the same ringtone. Also, can I change my answer to the VIP to the Sega sound? Yes, you can, the next time we do that. Zach Huge Thanks says, I just came here to say that I so appreciate that Blue takes the extra time to add in the music Ryan is sounding out and synchronizes it. It's not the first time I've noticed that kind of detail, and it's great every time. And at Holy Headshot says, making a note, I should finally watch Squid Game and make sure to have a can of frosting on hand. Licking gif.
And now it's time for the Kachu Pika P E Pika. If anybody didn't notice, that's Pikachu for very important poll.
Is there like a dictionary or a thesaurus? There is. That we can, is there really? Holy good lord. Okay.
Now, does Surfing Pikachu have like a certain different dialect? Because, you know, he's a little off.
Probably.
But yes, every Monday on Twitter, well, these guys post their VIP, the very important poll. If you'd like to participate, follow us on Twitter at GamersWeekPC. Question. With Gunstar Heroes' 29th anniversary this week, we're asking, what is your favorite run and gun game? Cuphead comes in at 16.8%. Metal Slug 3 at 21.4%, Contra at a whopping 48.1%, and Other at 13.7%. So let's look at some of the comments from the poll. At Memento Moore says, Turrican 2 on the Commodore 64. Yes, I'm old.
Very.
I always love seeing some Turrican love. Good for you, man. Next up from Refresh Games UK, Mega Man 2. And Frank Grande, those are all great games, but the comic nerd in me has to go with The Adventures of Batman and Robin for the Sega Genesis because it's Batman. At Simon Ashtar goes, I love and grew up with Contra 1 and 3. I love Way Forward's Contra 4, but if I could give another run and gun, I'd go with Gunman Clive. Imagine Contra or Mega Man set in the Wild West, and you can play as a duck. And last up, at Dudtravbu, I would love to see the Cuphead team be able to help work on a Contra remake. That new Contra game was awful. Yes,
oh, for sure.
Yes, it is. I just started playing that the other day. I bought it like a year and a half ago on sale. And I'm like 2 levels in and I'm just like, I'm not going to finish this. This is not worth it.
There's a new Contra game?
From like what, 2019? Contra Rogue Core?
Okay. I briefly remember it. I have not seen it. I don't know what the gameplay looks like. And from what you're saying, it's probably a dumpster fire.
Well, just take a twin stick shooter and add a stamina meter. So yeah, take all the fun out of it. That's great.
Good Lord. No thanks.
So based off the answers here, Donnie, what did you go with?
And the answers, my 2 picks with the answers that were given were Contra and Cuphead. Metal Slug, obviously great game. Contra, I've had a lot of fun with and a lot of love since I've been a kid. It's a game now that I can go back and kind of beat with relative ease. Cuphead was a friggin' nightmare to get through. I have yet to play the DLC. I'm still on the high from actually completing that game on difficult mode. So I wouldn't say it's my favorite run and gun, but it definitely gives me anxiety when I think about going back to play it. So among the picks here, I'm going to go with Contra. What about you, Ryan?
So I am going to go with Refresh Games UK on this one and go a little bit rogue because it's not usually considered a run and gun game. But Mega Man 2, for me, is a game that I cannot get enough of. I love the Robot Masters. It's a little bit unbalanced when you got the Metal Blade, but nonetheless, just being involved with, you know, event with Mega Man 2, having played it as a kid, I don't think you can get much better than that. Now, Mega Man 3 is definitely very, very good. But if I had to pick my favorite out of all the NES Mega Man games, number 2 is definitely my go-to. Jim, what about you?
When you did the Twitter poll, I threw in just, I couldn't go against Gunstar Heroes. It's too perfect of a game. Mm-hmm. It just controls perfect. It's so fun. Great soundtrack. And of the things here, I probably would have gone Cuphead if it, but like the run and gun part is kind of an afterthought. It's just more of a boss rush to me, but
yeah,
God, you know what, dude, Donnie, you're a better man than me. Cause I rage quit that game. I got to like the end of the second island and I just could not beat that three headed dragon. It killed me like 400 times and I just threw the controller away basically.
I'm the same way. There were so many times where that game was it was well developed because it takes your eyes away. It basically goes out of focus. So there's so much stuff going on the screen at any given time and your eyes trying to follow this thing. It's following that thing. Next thing you know, something hits you and you're dead. And I'm like, what the hell? And I used to stream that game for the longest time. And there was so many times where I would just rage and yell and scream and punch things. And it wasn't one of my best times, but oh my God, was there such a sense of accomplishment when I finally beat that game.
And actually, to Frank Grande's answer about Batman and Robin, I played the hell out of that as a kid.
Me
and
too.
I still have it, and I've never beaten it. I've never been able to get through that whole game either. Like when I was a kid, that like shmup level would just end me because it takes about a half hour to get through.
Yep,
and if I made it through that, I'd have like 3 lives left, and it's like, oh, this is over. So
is it time for a revisit?
I think it might be. Maybe I'll have to make it on our page, on our podcast. We like make New Year's resolution games. So games that like we have to beat in the next year. So
ooh, I like
maybe
that.
I'll throw that on the list for next year.
Love it.
Yeah, it's a good way to force the old backlog out of the way. And backlog of hundreds upon hundreds of games at this point. It's a problem.
That will be a topical response later on in the podcast. All right, so why don't we go ahead and do our patron shoutouts for the week? We couldn't do what we do without the help of our gorgeous patrons. Here are the generous folks supporting Gamers Week on Patreon. The Wizard of Zardoz, Clayman71, Great Sayaman81, BNT Zillaguy, Geek With That, Crunchy Kong, Sheriff Snacks, Frank Grande, JNL Game, Love Retro BTW, Steven San, Ramboski, Terry Kinnair, Ducks in Disguise, Jim and Colleen, Games of Coffee, Davey PGH, the Red Ox PDX family, including Shannon and Luke, Zach Huge Thanks, Random Retro Dude, Princess Kitty Mew Mew, Rye Rise, Secret Best Friend, Mega Retro Man, Gametroid, Emo S, Bill Tucker, Rye Bread's number one fan, and Fruitcake's number one stan. If you like what you hear today, and we really hope that you do, please consider joining us on Patreon. Your support helps cover the cost of producing the show, as well as other cool stuff we'll be doing, like prizes and giveaways. You'll also gain access to our patron-only bonus cast called Gamers Week Uncut. Patrons with benefits. Visit patreon.com/gamersweek or follow the link in the show notes to learn more.
All right, let's take a look at our headlines for the week. Our headline segment is proudly sponsored by the Retro Game Club podcast. It's a fantastic family-friendly retro gaming podcast. In each episode, Rob and Hugh pick 2 games to play and discuss, as well as news, interviews, and other topics. Currently, they're playing through Asteroids and Super Mario Kart. Visit them at RetroGameClub.net or follow the link in the show notes.
I am awful at Asteroids. I don't get it. I can't watch everything that's going on at once. And I've tried many times, but Asteroids has kicked my ass for decades.
Now, Asteroids is the one with the turn knob, right? If I remember correctly?
I believe so, yeah. So it's, of course, you know, you're that triangle in the middle of the...
And that warp is useless.
Absolutely useless. Come on.
It's like, oh, I'll escape, and I'm inside the asteroid. Great.
Right.
Fooled you. From GameSpot. Xbox Game Pass Friends and Family Bundle officially confirmed by Microsoft. Microsoft has officially confirmed its Xbox Game Pass Friends and Family plan, which it had begun testing in Ireland and Colombia last month. Under the new subscription plan, up to 4 people will be able to share an Xbox Game Pass Ultimate membership, with all the perks of that service included. U.S. pricing details, or a global rollout date have yet to be revealed, but the Xbox Game Pass Friends and Family plan works out to roughly $10 more than the current Solar plan that's priced at about $15. According to an Xbox FAQ, converting a current Game Pass Ultimate membership will have its time converted to reflect the value of the Friends and Family plan. Microsoft also mentioned that subscribers can only be a member of one group at a time, and that the primary account holder can invite up to 4 people at a time, with a maximum of 8 people who accept to join your account per year. Only the primary account holder can share their Game Pass benefits via home sharing, and group members cannot share their other accounts on their console. Other limitation to take note of is that Xbox Game Pass Friends and Family plan can only be shared with people who live in your region or country. If a group member changes their country region of residence and it no longer matches that of the primary account holder, they will be removed from the group. How do you guys read this much at one time? I run a beer podcast. My body is not in peak performance for this.
You did fantastically. Fantastic, man.
That's also confusing as hell. Like, you can have 4 people at a time, but 8 people can join your account, or the primary care holder can share the benefits. But if you're not in this country, then yada, yada, yada. Like, that's totally confusing.
I do find it interesting that Netflix right now is cracking down on account sharing.
And
Microsoft, they're like, do it. Just share as many people as you can.
Yeah, invite some friends and family over, do whatever. Although this can be a little cumbersome at Christmas time. When it's like, hey, why aren't I in your plan? Like, what can I do to get in on this?
Ooh, it's the MySpace top 8 all over again.
Absolutely. Oh, my God. Yes, it is.
And I love how, like, after the heels of, like, Sony, like, redoing its PlayStation Plus and how confusing that is and how it didn't really give you all the games they were promising and everything like that, Microsoft's like, okay, we're going to make our thing more complicated, too. Why? But at least it's, you know, for the benefit of people, it gives way more people a chance to log in. It's just, you know, it's got obviously got to be a carrot for people to sign up for Game Pass more.
Right. Right. For sure.
So if I'm reading this correctly, you spend $25, you get the Xbox Game Pass, and you can have up to 4 people in your account use this at any time. Right.
That's what I'm gathering from it, too. Yeah.
So realistically, you could collect $5 from one of those friends, or each one of those friends, $5, $10, $15. There you go. You're only paying $10 a month to get all of this stuff, all of these games, all of this access and whatnot. I think that's a damn good deal, especially if people continue to pay you for it.
Yeah, and this is way better than what they're doing with the Switch when you have to have multiple accounts or family plan.
Yeah, that sucks.
Yeah, the family plan is not only is it super expensive, but from my recollection, it doesn't allow you to share games. So, if say for example, you've got Splatoon on your main Switch, you can't take the same cartridge and put it on a different Switch and make that a part of the account. It'll still play your account. So it's not like, all right, my son wants to play as his own character. I can't do that. And it sounded like it was going to be what they're doing, where it was like you were going to share accounts, online access, and then be able to play as different accounts as you go in. But it didn't turn out that way. So I think Xbox, I'm not going to say that they looked at it and were like, we need to do better than Nintendo. We're gonna. But it's definitely a much better, you know, gamer experience, I think, to be able to share this across. And from what I could tell as well, if you've got the same games, you can play them together, all that good stuff. And if to your point, Donnie, for only $5 a month per person, that's a heck of a deal.
Oh, absolutely. I know Steam does the same thing, or they used to, where if you have a library of games in Steam and you wanted to share that with somebody, you could. You could get their username and add them to your account somehow and share your library with them. Because a friend of mine actually did that when I first started off with Steam. I had no games whatsoever, but he had a whole library. And I was like, oh, OK, I'll try this game out. I'll try this game out. I'll try this one and this one and this one. The Switch, like you said, is very cumbersome. We have two Switches in our family, my Switch and my kid's Switch. And the Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, which came with their Switch, I'm able to play on mine as well because I have my account linked to both of them. However, gotcha. Once my son turns on the Switch and I'm playing mine, it's like, nope, the Switch is the other Switch is active. You can no longer play this. And I can't tell you how many times I've gotten kicked out of a Mario Kart race because that happened.
Wait, it boots the active player?
It boots the active player when he's not even playing Mario Kart.
Oh, my God. It's amazing how bad Nintendo is in anything online related.
You'd think they'd be up on par with it.
It's amazing. I mean, and up to this point, I still think that Microsoft, even just base Xbox Live, has been the best service out there, even before Game Pass, just for being able to like party chat with buddies, you know, inside and out of games, right, and stuff like that.
So absolutely.
This just adds to that. I remember my first time trying to do like PlayStation Online. I was like, wait, I can't talk to you? What? Huh?
Yeah. I was PlayStation 3. I had a PlayStation 3 before I had an Xbox 360. And it was really kind of cumbersome being able to talk to people. And then I get the Xbox 360, and I'm like, wait a second, this has got like built in where you could get in a party with a whole bunch of people and start chatting and play video games. And I was like, oh, come on, I need this.
All right, next up from GameIndustry.biz, Nintendo removing Mario Kart Tour loot boxes in October. Nintendo has announced that it will drop the loot boxes elements of Mario Kart Tour in an upcoming update. The mobile spinoff of the best-selling racing series currently allows players to spend virtual currency on firing pipes to yield randomized rewards, including new characters and carts. Nintendo does disclose the odds of winning the items available through the pipe, with some characters known to be as low as 0.04%. Some characters, yeah, right? Some characters and carts are also only available for a limited time. In a message to users, Nintendo revealed it will be adding a spotlight shop and an in-game marketplace where players can purchase specific items. Sensor Tower tells GameIndustry.biz that since its launch in 2019, Mario Kart Tour has generated an estimated 293 million for Nintendo. It's worth noting that this is not all from loot box purchases, as Sensor Tower tells us that the figures include monthly subscriptions, the $4.99 gold pass. Mario Kart Tour is the platform holder's second biggest mobile game. Although it is quite some distance behind the $1 billion made by Fire Emblem Heroes, news of the loot box's removal follows Blizzard's announcement to be removing the monetization mechanic from Overwatch as it transitions to the sequel and next month. Loot boxes have been under fire for years, with governments around the world debating whether they constitute gambling and require regulation. In July, the UK government stopped short of introducing such measures, but demanded that the games industry do more to protect children from gambling-related harms of loot boxes. It worked, boys. Hey, we complained long enough. People are finally getting rid of loot boxes.
Not all of them, but some of them.
Right. That's progress, yeah, man.
And I would like to know just how much of the 293 million is from loot boxes for, right, Mario Kart Tour.
And that's, Nintendo is never going to die. Like, they always just find a way to like backwards their way over just piles of money. Like, even when the 3DS was failing and the Wii was failing at the same time, they're like, oh, let's release little plastic toys and make all the money and still be fine. Like, it's amazing. I don't know how they do it.
Great marketing team, I'm assuming.
Really? And I mean, I guess you put like one of the most loved franchises on a phone and like, it's okay, but I guess people are hooked on it, so good for them. Holy crap.
Are amiibos still a thing?
They are. They definitely
are. Slowed down.
It's true. They have slowed down as well.
Can you use them with the Switch?
Oh, yeah.
You can. Yep.
No kidding. Okay. 293 million for Mario Kart Tour and 1 billion.
Yep.
From Fire Emblem Heroes. Like, Fire Emblem, is that, I'm assuming that's a role-playing game?
Yeah, it is.
Okay, and they have loot boxes in that game.
I'm not 100% sure on that, to be honest with you. But it makes it, based off of the article, it makes it sound like there is.
Jeez, $1 billion.
If you think about that, too, like, how many companies are out there trying to make $1 billion in revenue? And this company's doing it with one freaking product.
Yeah, they just casually do it. I mean, I'm not a fan of loot boxes. I really am not, because I think it preys on people's gambling. I wouldn't say necessarily addiction, but it does prey on that, because it's that, oh, well, if I just spend $5, you know, randomly, like, let's see what I get. Like, okay. And the next, like, that's how they get you. They might, like, that first one, they're like, oh, here's something kind of semi-decent. You're like, oh, okay, I might get this every time. And you spend $15 more and you don't really get anything. And you're like, well, you know, if I spend another $5, then, you know, maybe I'll get something. And the next thing you know, you're out on the street and you don't have a place to live.
Well, and it plays to this concept called the gambler's bias. So imagine you're sitting at a roulette table and 10 blacks show up in a row. The gambler's bias is to naturally put it, the next one's going to be red, right? Eventually, right. It's going to be red. And it's the same thing with this, where I'm saying, oh, well, I haven't hit the loot box that I really want yet. But you know what? That my odds are now better because I have purchased this many loot boxes. But no, that's a fallacy. They're exactly the same. You could conceivably get the same prize every time you go through it. The probability is probably higher that you will.
And maybe Nintendo is keeping track of how much money I've spent. Maybe they'll throw me a bone here.
I just love how many games have like ruined their launches and like their entire life cycle by throwing in too many microtransactions. Like Evolve and Battlefront 2 and games like that just came out and everyone hated immediately. I didn't even know loot boxes were in Fire Emblem Heroes and they made $1 billion off that. Insane.
All right, from Game Rant, rumor, new 2D Mario game in development with surprise character return. Nintendo leaker Zippo, who has accurately leaked Nintendo news in the past, has claimed that they have information on an unannounced 2D Super Mario game. According to Zippo, this new 2D Super Mario project will not have the new Super Mario tagline, abandoning the style of that sub-series to embrace a surprising new art style. The game will reportedly feature online multiplayer and the return of obscure character Foreman Spike, who appeared as Mario's rival in Wrecking Crew. Wow, that's a throwback.
Deep cut.
As for when Super Mario fans may have the chance to play this new 2D Super Mario game for themselves, Zippo claims that the game is very far in development and may be nearly complete. Nintendo is apparently looking to launch it at some point in 2023 or 2024, so it doesn't seem as though fans should expect a surprise Super Mario release this holiday season or anything like that. Of course, all of this information should be taken with a grain of salt. Some of the best-selling video games of all time are 2D Super Mario Adventures, and so it wouldn't make sense to let the franchise lay dormant for too long. As for claims like Foreman Spike is returning, that too is fairly believable since the character is reportedly going to be featured in the Super Mario movie, and so it would make sense to bring him back to the spotlight in video games as well. Reputable sources have claimed that Nintendo is hosting a Nintendo Direct fairly soon, so perhaps this 2D Super Mario game will be announced then. For now, though, fans should definitely keep their expectations in check. Check yourself before you wreck yourself.
Wow. Well done with the pun for Wrecking Crew. Yeah, there should be an applause with that.
We'll have to put that in post.
I'm on it.
So, a new 2D Mario game, great. Is it... I think going back to 2D, is that really something that we want? Because we've had Super Mario Odyssey, Super Mario 3D World, where I really like seeing and controlling Mario in 3D. So do we really want to go back to a 2D style?
I mean, I think it plays to probably our age group more than probably the younger age group. Obviously, there's a lot of nostalgia. And I think we were saying this before, Nintendo really knows how to bring in the bucks, and man, does nostalgia pay at Nintendo.
It certainly does.
Yeah, I've got that Game & Watch where it's got Zelda on it, the one where it's got Mario on it. I own these games already in several different ways, and I still bought the damn thing. So they know.
Oh, yeah. Every time they come out with something like that, it's like, oh, people rush. People just go to the store like, oh, my God, this is going to be the new hottest thing. I'm going to buy 10 of these watches and I'm going to wait. I'm going to sit on them or I'm going to try and sell them for $150 when I purchased them for $19.99. It's a madhouse when it comes to Nintendo stuff.
For sure.
I'm just a little disappointed because I'm kind of a dick because that they said it's going to be the Wrecking Crew guy. Because my first thought of character returning, I'm like, I wanted them to leave it vague so everyone would just get hyped up for Geno from Super Mario RPG. And then all of a sudden, it's the guy from Wrecking Crew and everyone goes, what the hell? Again! They did it again!
You know what's funny is I was thinking the same thing, but not Geno. I was going to go with Mario 2 Wart. Bring back Wart. Hashtag bring back
Wart. I'm
with
you on that.
Yeah, the frog guy, right? Yeah, that's what I was thinking of too.
And at least we're at the point where they're not like, they've run out of Wii U games finally. So they have to make something new. Finally, a friggin' new 2D Mario game. And I hope it has a different feel. Like, I mean, let's be honest here. Like, new Super Mario is worn out its welcome, basically. There's been a billion games. So Whatever they throw in there, hopefully it has a brand new feel to it. But man, thank God it's just going to be something new.
And if you think about it, too, like a vast majority of what you're doing on Mario Maker 2 is 2D stuff. So there's definitely a market for that. People like that style of Mario. But fair to your point, I would like it to be something new where, you know, with Mario Maker 2, it's obviously all the old stuff that's, you know, that has been done in the past brought forward. But what could you do differently with a 2D Mario game? Are you going to make him like photorealistic Mario?
Ooh, that's not bad.
Is it going to be Lou Albano? And is he, every time he jumps, he's like, do the Mario.
No, please. No, please. No. Maybe put him in a horror setting where he's actually killing people, like with a chainsaw or something.
Ah, the first M-rated.
Take him out of his element.
Yes. Mario's due. Mario's sick of Bowser and he's coming with a vengeance.
There's also a game that RGB owns that's it's an adult rated game for the Switch. I think you could put Mario in that setting as well.
Definitely. Definitely. I'm not going to name the game.
Look, I have a few of these games. I'm not going to lie. So,
see, okay, I'm not the only one.
You are not alone.
Look, I just like to embrace culture. That's all.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I have to experience a lot of different things.
I'm stealing that.
From Kotaku, someone is selling nearly every console ever made on eBay for $1 million. While many a collector can claim to have any number of rare video games and memorabilia, few, if any, actually own a majority of every console variation manufactured in the last 50 years. But that's exactly what one France-based collector has just put up for auction. Some 2,400 different consoles, from standard issue to special editions to variations never officially for sale, for the cool asking price of 984,000 euros or around $1 million. Listed on French eBay and spotted by consolevariations.com, video game Uber enthusiast Cario 30 sale includes some 2,400 consoles, in quotes from the first to the very last, a number of games for said consoles, and a bunch of fun statues and other video game collectibles. A Google translation of the eBay listing reveals that Cario 30 began collecting in the early 90s, before collecting might have been considered a thing. The road to this current mega collection was not without some back and forth, as they sold their entire 90s collection at the turn of the century. Though they kept collecting during the 2000s, it came to an end in 2011 when they stopped for a quote-unquote lack of time and the difficulty in finding rare items. But the story doesn't end there. In 2018, they fell into the trap of collecting after visiting Tokyo, where they acquired almost everything they sold off previously. That twist is what leads to this gargantuan collection of a majority of consoles ever made all in one place. And it is a sight to behold. As they say on the eBay auction, they do not believe it's possible to find some of these items anymore, even if one had the financial means. They also suggest that their stunning collection might be a good fit for a museum.
Belongs in a museum.
Well, if you do the math on this one, 2,400 consoles, $1 million, that equates to about $420 a console, which is a deal for some and a terrible deal for others. I got to say, I'm sitting here thinking to myself, I have about 24 consoles in my collection right now, and I've only got 1% of what this guy has. And I think that my 24 consoles is an excessive amount of consoles to have in your house.
Do you guys have that thing where like your normie friends come over and they see your collection and go, oh, you could open a store or museum with this. And then you look back at them and go, dude, if you only knew, like, this is nothing. And then you see a guy with like an actual museum, basically over like probably like 500 storage units or something. What do you even do with all that?
Like you can't, you'd have to own a mansion to display it all at any given time. Because it's insane. I mean, 2,400 consoles.
Right.
And I will say, though, I would challenge the person who actually ends up buying this to hook them all up to one TV at a time. Just imagine how many hookups you'd have to buy, like all the splitters and stuff.
The nightmare. That's going to be some serious cable management.
And this reminds me of that scene from Christmas Vacation where Clark turns on the outdoor lights and then they have to turn on the auxiliary power at the nuclear power plant.
I mean, when you stop and think about it, you're like 2,400 different consoles. Is that are there really that many different consoles out there? And I'm kind of flabbergasted. I would say if you told me that there were 100 consoles, I'd be like,
I don't really think so. But 2,400? Like, I'd really like to know what some of these are.
My guess is a vast majority of them are Pong clones, if I had to guess.
Ah, Pong clones, maybe the Fantastic Collection from the N64.
Some of those rare prototype things like the Atari 2700, stuff like that.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. Yep.
But yeah, I mean, every single color possible of N64. But even then, that's only like 15 tops. Man, I'm trying to wrap my head around this.
Probably different promotional consoles, like the Taco Bell stuff with Xbox and PlayStation. And anytime anybody, any other manufacturer, any type of restaurant or whatever has given away a specific console, it would be one of theirs as well.
Oh, yeah, true.
I will say, though, if you think about it, too, he's saying every one that was ever sold. So you're talking in every region as well, Japan, Europe, United States.
Yeah.
Right. So if you think about it, too, and I'm going to go back on the Pong consoles there. I mean, the market was completely flooded in the mid 70s to the 80s of Pong stuff. And it's funny, it's like the one guy, Colonel Falcon, that's on Twitter, he posts like rare unique consoles from different regions, and they're always just the strangest looking item that you've ever looked at, but they're essentially Pong. That's it for the most part. Oh yeah,
my buddy Game Whisperer on Twitter, he is a huge fan of collecting just all these off the wall Famiclones from like all these different countries and stuff like that. Just these ridiculous designs. So I'm sure it's just wall to walls of that Pong consoles.
I will say that I've always wanted to go to Tokyo. I feel that that is like the mecca for video gamers, and if I went there, it would be so much trouble. Because of all the different game stores that are there, and I don't know if things are a lot cheaper in Japan. Like when
they 100% are.
Okay, yes. Then I'm screwed.
I got to be honest with you. If I went there, say you were going to Tokyo for 2 weeks, like probably three of those days would just be at Super Potato.
Yes,
by itself.
Screw that. I'm going there. I'm buying a Gundam. I'm bringing that home.
Guys, don't worry. I don't need a flight back. I'm going to take the Gundam.
How the hell am I going to get all this stuff home? Yeah,
like it's just like I'm thinking like all the CDI variations, all the 3DO variations, yep. Just so much random crap you can have. Like, I thought I got lucky finding a CDI at like a Goodwill, and like this guy's like, oh yeah, I've got 17 of them. It's like, what?
Whoa, wait a second. You found a CDI at Goodwill? Oh, dude,
that's my best thrifting score I ever got. It still has the sticker on it for $6.97. I'm sure some teenager thought it was another DVD player and just stuck it on the pile with everything else.
Oh my God.
I was like, well, for $7, I have to try it. It could be broken and still worth it. And yeah, I went, I bought Tetris for it because it was like, on everything, and it was $8. And I got this converter that would convert CDI controllers to Super NES, because CDI controllers of any kind are ridiculously expensive. So it was just cheaper to go for that converter route. And yeah, the damn thing works. The tray's a little broken, but besides that, it plays the games.
All right, I'm pleased to announce that this week we'll be giving away another game on behalf of the Gamers Week podcast, but it's no ordinary game. In fact, I have the Gamers creators with me today to discuss the newest Game Boy game. That's right, Game Boy game to hit the homebrew scene, Gelatinous Humanity Lost, created by two gentlemen you might know from Twitter, John Rue of the Retro Room Rue and Stephen Long of Longy Long. So guys, before we talk about the game, tell our listeners a little bit about yourselves.
My name's John Rue, and I have a company called The Retro Room Games, and it's basically like a development and publishing house.
Love it.
Well, riding in on Rue's coattails, as I tend to do, I have no real background in game development or publishing. I have a couple of blogs, and I have a little bit of a presence on Twitter, but other than that, I'm just longtime fan of video games in general, and I'm the type of personality that whenever there's something I like that people are doing, I always think, well, I bet I could do that too.
He has a book too, just gotta say. He's a writer.
I got a book. I do a little of everything.
It's a good book. It really is. I bought a copy of it, and it's really good.
So what's the name of the book?
So it's called Dark Alley Marketing. And it's a kind of a marketing guide specifically for indie game developers. My professional background is in marketing and especially writing. So I was noticing a lot of indie developers were contacting the blog I worked for at the time, and they needed help bad. So I put together a manual just to kind of help indie game developers navigate the back alleys of cheap marketing.
And, you know, that's perfect, too, because I know for a fact that a lot of our listeners are kind of indie game developers themselves. You know, they have projects that they're interested in taking a look at. So we will definitely include links to this, you know, in the show notes for today's episode, for sure.
Sure. It is. I have to warn you, it's extremely outdated, and I'm in the process of making a new second edition.
Nice. So I got to say, I was really excited to be a backer of your Kickstarter, because I've known you guys for a while in passing as a part of the kind of the Twitter retro gaming community.
Yeah.
You know, and I love funding indie projects like this as well. So as soon as I heard you guys were doing something like this, I was like, I'm all in.
Yeah, dude. Thanks. Really.
So we appreciate it. Yeah, for sure.
Again, you guys are extremely passionate about it. You guys have done a really good job of involving the community in with it. But, you know, is for somebody who is not familiar with Gelatinous Humanity Lost, tell me a little bit about how it started and what the game's about.
Well, it started with just literally me messaging Steven because he posted something on Twitter that was cool looking. He posted this like Game Boy looking sort of like scene. It was just like just a scene. There was no characters in it or anything. And it was like, I think, way too advanced to actually work on the Game Boy, but it was like with the Game Boy colors and it looked really cool to me. And I was like, hey, dude, you want to like, because I suck at art, dude. I'm a terrible artist. And Steven is great with art. And I was like, you want to make a game with me? And he was like, yeah. And yeah, you know, and we lived happily ever after. So
I love that. So, talk to me about the game.
It's kind of hard.
Yeah, it's definitely like...
It is. So that's what I've heard. I've heard that it's extremely hard. I haven't played it because I wanted to keep everything kind of together as we provide for the giveaway. I'm planning on buying another copy just for myself because I definitely want to get through it. But I've been told it's really hard. And in fact, you have a harder mode to it as well.
Yeah, the nightmare mode is actually the original difficulty before we toned it back.
Yeah, we had to ease it up a little bit, but I'm terrible at video games, and you know, it was really interesting to create something that was challenging for like the general player, you know, because as a tester of Gelatinous, like it was rough. You know, I'm just really not a good gamer at all, and you know, it's really for those kind of people who are really into a hardcore challenge. You know, it's like the Dark Souls for Game Boy.
And you know what, though? Like, I found from my experience that the retro community in general are people who are looking for something like that, a challenge, if you will. And, you know, having played a lot of games and doing tournaments and that kind of thing with it, having something new for someone to play, I think is awesome. And I'm so glad that you guys have decided to kind of jump into that space, because at the end of the day, more content for retro gamers, I think, is always a good thing. To anybody who is 100% unfamiliar with the game, it's essentially a platformer where you are like a gelatinous blob, correct?
Yep, a slimy ball of goo, yes.
And as you traverse through the levels, obviously you've got bad guys to deal with. You get upgrades as you go along, that kind of thing.
Yeah, the biggest challenge is the platforming, which I did the level design, and then Rue added the enemies. So either one, I think, of those elements would have made it difficult by itself, but combined it's grindy, but it's extremely fast paced.
So what was your favorite part about making it?
For me, I you know, I really like team effort. I really like that sort of like, it's like Steven. I know Steven was, played music growing up too. And, you know, I was in bands and stuff like that. And I really like that sort of basement. Let's like put this piece of art together and let's like present it to the world, you know? So I really liked working as a team on something that was secret, you know, a super secret project and presenting it to the world, you know?
For sure.
That's a really good answer. Once again, I'll write in on the coattails, I guess. I've always been kind of a nerd for marketing. And for me, really, the Kickstarter portion of it, organizing it and getting all that together with the box art and the manual and just all the little goodies. That was a lot of fun for me.
Turned out really well too. I really like, I'm in love with with our own game.
As far as the giveaway for folks who are listening, if you'd like to enter the giveaway, you can check out at Retro Game Brews pinned tweet. All you got to do is take a picture or a screenshot of you listening to the episode and post it in the comments. We'll be accepting entries from Friday, September 9th, all the way to Tuesday, September 13th. So you're already listening to the show, so you might as well get your entry in now. So thank you guys again for joining us. But before we go, do you have any future projects our listeners can look forward to?
Absolutely. Of course, me and Steven are teaming up again. You know, we've had talks of doing more stuff with Gelatinous within the universe of Gelatinous as well. So there's definitely some stuff on the horizon.
There's an extended Gelatinous universe. Yes. we're dabbling in a different console for the next one, but the next game intends to be, you know, Gelatinous was very difficult just because there are only so many ways you can express yourself on the Game Boy. You're very limited. But the next one is going to be a lot less hair ripping and a lot more story driven, more kind of adventure and, you know, something to draw players in.
Yeah, I think it's cool for sure. I'm excited for it.
So where could our listeners find out more information about these upcoming projects?
I'm sure Twitter's a good place to always figure out what both of us are up to. Yeah, we have a Gelatinous page as well, where I'm sure things like this might get talked about.
And as far as the show notes for today too, you guys, anybody who's listening out there, will include links to all of their social media accounts as well as their projects too. So definitely check those out in the show notes. Well, again, guys, thank you so much for taking the time to talk about, you know, your history behind Gelatinous, you know, your passion behind it. I think it definitely shows. And we are super excited to give away the game and expose more folks to it.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us on here. I really appreciate it.
I really appreciate it. Thanks for having us.
All right, so why don't we jump into our top 3 new releases for the week, starting off with Steel Rising. Platforms are PlayStation 5, Xbox Series X and S, and PC. Paris, 1789. The French Revolution has been suppressed with the bloodshed by Louis XVI and his merciless mechanical army. Aegis, a mysterious automaton masterpiece, must confront the king's army alone to save history in this challenging action RPG. Next up is Temtem. Platform is PlayStation 5, Xbox Series X and S, Switch, and PC. Temtem is a massively multiplayer creature collection adventure. Seek adventure in the lonely airborne archipelago alongside your Temtem squad. Catch every Temtem, battle other tamers, customize your house, join a friend's adventure, or explore the dynamic online world. And last up, Splatoon 3, platform Switch. Enter the Splatlands, a sun-scorched desert inhabited by battle-hardened Inkling and Octolings. Even in this desolate environment, turf war reigns supreme and battles rage in new stages located in the surrounding wilds. Dynamic new moves help these fighters dodge attacks and cover more ground, along with a new bow-shaped weapon to sling ink. So taking a look at these three, Donnie, which of these three would you be picking up this week?
Even though I've never played Splatoon, I've seen you play. It does look somewhat fun, and I would be willing to give this game a try. I've taken a look at Temtem, not my cup of tea. You lost me at massively multiplayer, and Steel Rising just doesn't, I don't know, that whole kind of genre doesn't sit, like, it doesn't entice me. The French Revolution with automatons and mechanical things, it reminds me of Bioshock Infinite a little bit with what they try to do with the American Revolution. Kind of okay, but I don't know. Just something about this game just doesn't, like, it doesn't appeal to me. So Splatoon 3 is probably my pick.
Nice. Jim, what about you?
I'm actually going to go with Steel Rising because I realized once I hit 35, then anything history-related instantly grabs my attention. I fall down, like, rabbit holes of history YouTube channels all the time for, like, hours on end. So this with that twist and all, like, I would love to play Splatoon 3, but I just don't have the time for online like shooters anymore. So I know if I got that, it would just like collect dust and kind of be a waste for me. Temtem, But yeah, I'm hoping it's more heavy on the action than the RPG, because I famously hate RPGs. But if it's more actiony, I think I could get into it. So I would like to give that a shot. If it's on Xbox, hopefully it hits Game Pass and I'll do it there.
Now, Ryan, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that your choice this week, probably Temtem. Am I correct?
You know me so well.
I know I do.
Except you don't, because of course I'm going with Splatoon 3. Of course, I love the original Splatoon. Big fan of Splatoon 2. Got a chance to actually play Splatoon 3 with their Splatfest download that you could do for the weekend. That was awesome. I really, really enjoyed it. It's the same Splatoon experience that you get, just upgraded, right? New weapons, new boards, new maps. And obviously I can't speak to the single player campaign, which I, you know, never was really my thing for either of the other games, but the online play is fan freaking tastic. And I cannot wait to get my hands on this, play it, level up, and you might not see me for a while because I'm going to be level 100 by the end of next week. So
you're going to be splatting all over the place. That's why we won't see you.
Splat, splat, splat.
Now, Ryan, have you actually ever used like the Nintendo phone app talk thing they tried to do?
No way.
Has anyone ever used that?
Not to my knowledge. I mean, I just use Discord. I got Discord. Why would I mess around with an inferior app? I got to be honest with you.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a look at our main topic for this week. From the Washington Post, overwhelmed by your video game backlog? Yes, we are. We've got tips. Got any tips? Any tips? Picture this. It's the end of a long day. You're tired, looking to give your weary brain a well-deserved break with something mindless and fun in the precious few hours before you have to do it all over again. Do you pick up playing the game you stopped halfway through because life got crazy? Or that new game your friends have all been hyping up? Or any of the dozens of titles gathering virtual dust in your Steam library bought for a steal and never once fired up? If you're like me, more often than not, you end up with either 1, retreating to time-tested favorites, games you've already sunk hours and hours into, or 2, burning yourself out overthinking your options and ultimately gravitating to whatever TV show or movie or app is less overwhelming in that moment. It sucks when a pastime turns into a source of stress. Here are some tools to keep that from happening.
Let the RNG gods decide. If you're struggling to make a decision on what to play next, then don't. Let the universe, Lady Luck, the random number generator gods, whatever you call it, decide for you. There are a couple of ways to do this. One option is to create a spreadsheet of all the games on your backlog and use the random sort feature to generate a recommendation at random. Randomization can work as a good barometer. If you randomly select a game and something about it feels off, and you're not excited by the idea of playing it, you can skip that and circle back later. Or just drop that title from your backlog.
Number 2, offload the process onto a computer. The recommendation engine from the video game market research firm Quantic Foundry is another great option. You don't need an account to use it. Just enter the titles of 3 games you enjoy, and it generates a list of recommendations by cross-referencing the company's database, which includes data from more than 300,000 players about their gaming preferences, demographics, and titles they enjoy. Free cataloging sites like Backlogged and How Long to Beat are great resources. Think Goodreads, but for all the games you've been meaning to play, to help streamline the decision process. Once you've input your library, you can sort games into categories: want to play, currently playing, completed, abandoned, to keep track of your progress.
And number 3, figure out what you're signing up for. In addition to reading reviews, you can check out a game's runtime to help you narrow down your options based on what your schedule permits. How Long to Beat, giggity, can help with that. As the name implies, it's a site that lists the average runtime for video games broken down by playstyles. Whether you're a completionist trying to platinum the game, or just looking to get through the main campaign, the estimated playtimes are aggregated from player feedback, and each entry lays out how many players were polled, what systems they played on, etc. Nailing down a fuller picture of the time commitment you're getting into when you press start means one less variable for your brain to chew over when you sit down to play.
Now, they've mentioned twice how long to beat. That website is invaluable to me.
Really? I've never heard of it.
It is a godsend. Any game that comes up as like one of our Patreon review requests, or just something I'm trying to hit from the backlog, I look up that first and I'm like, 20 hours, I'm not touching you yet. And then I'll like try to hopefully find something like 10 hours or less. But yeah, I go to that site so much more than I ever expected to.
When we were doing RGB High Score, the one we were doing on Twitch where you only got 2 hours, I wanted to find games that were between 30 and 45 minutes to beat, because that meant you could potentially do, you know, up to 3 runs if you were, you know, so inclined to do. So went into how long to beat, and that's how I decided a lot of the games that we pick for that. Because honestly, at first what I was doing is I was going onto YouTube and checking out like, you know, long plays.
Yeah.
Or like a let's play and finding out how much time it was. And then you'd have to watch to see if the person like f***ed around in the menus for a while, right, to see how much it was. And so how long to beat, when I found that resource, it became 100% invaluable to me.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So how do you guys normally keep track of your backlogs? Do you actually make lists of anything, or you just go off the old noggin?
For me, it's the noggin. I take a look at my shelf. I'm just like, okay, haven't played that. All right, let me play some Tetris for about 6 hours.
Right. So you're pretty much what the guy is saying is that you stare at your games and then go, you know what? I haven't played Tetris in, you know, 9 hours, so I guess, right, I need to play it again.
It's that whole thing with Netflix. Okay, so Netflix, Hulu, all this stuff where there's so many different options. You're like, I don't know what to pick. There's so much to choose from. What can I buy? Like, I don't know if I'm in the mood for a comedy. I don't know if I'm in the mood for a horror movie. Okay, this looks new, but I mean, Ferris Bueller's Day Off is staring me right in the face. And I love that movie. I know what to expect with that thing. So why don't I just pick that? But this thing's over here. And I'm like, screw it. I'll just turn it off and go to bed.
And really, that whole intimidation factor by the fact that there's so much choice makes that difficult. That's like, you know, when PlayStation came out, they said, oh, we're gonna have like 700 games for you to choose from. That wasn't appealing to me for that exact reason, because I'm going, 700 games,
right?
You crazy, that's a lot to choose. Yeah, so it's like that's a lot to choose from, you know. And that's intimidating. And I gotta be honest with you though, I don't look at my backlog of games and get like annoyed at it though. I will say that it's something where, you know, I feel the stress that I need to finish every single game that I own. I've come to that realization a long time ago that it's just not going to happen. And I'm comfortable with that. I can live with that. You know what? I test every game. So technically I have quote unquote played every game I own, right?
I use that same excuse.
The 3 minutes that I played, you know, this random game is sufficient enough for me. But I tried to, though, catalog my games a long time ago. So it was like Game Eye allowed you to input your games, but that's a lot of work, you know.
It is.
Yeah. And just sitting there pulling off the shelf, looking them up. I mean, it's got a barcode scanner, which is great for complete in box games, but 9 times out of 10 doesn't freaking work. And you know, it's so much work that I don't know the payoff would be enough for me to be able to catalog absolutely everything I own.
Yeah, I've tried to do Excel spreadsheets. I have a phone app and stuff like that. And all of them, I just eventually lose it after a while, lose interest and just get lazy. It's just too much. And then I think, like, you know, my brain is a steel trap and I'm good. And then I come home from work and there's a game there that I go, I already have this. And I go, must have gotten drunk and bought again. So
you didn't consult the Oracle before you went and made your purchase.
Nope. No, I did not.
I use price charting, and that's where I keep track of all my collection. I've tried Game Eye. Some of them actually require you to have a subscription. They're like, oh, well, you can put in, you can choose one system and put all your games in, but then you have to pay for another, you know, for an actual subscription for this to add other consoles. And I'm like, screw that. So I keep track of stuff on price charting. So, like, the thought of using another service to catalog games, like having to do all that work, just does not, that turns me off almost immediately.
Oh yeah, I've tried the phone app I use. Like, it was like, okay, pay $3 and you have the whole catalog of a console. I'm like, oh cool. But then you start to look up like region variants or stuff that's only exclusive to Japan, and it's like, oh no, you have to pay another $3 for the Super Famicom and not the SNES. It's like, man, screw this.
Video game tracking DLC.
Exactly.
It's ridiculous.
Does EA own that?
I do like the idea of a service where if you typed in 3 games that you really enjoy, it would pull up a game that you maybe you're not familiar with. I like the idea of that. But the problem is that
I also have a little bit of expensive taste because most of mine is RPGs and those become expensive after a while. So yawn. It's going to be like, yes, yeah, it's going to be like Crusader of Senti. It's like, oh, come on.
Oh, dude, that's one of those I regret not buying. Like, it's one of those games that 10 years ago, I'm like, $300. I'm never going to pay that much for a game. Exactly. And now it's $1,200. I'm like, I should have spent $300.
So why don't you just spend the $1,200 now? Because, you know, it'll be like $3,000 in 10 years.
No, in 10 years, it's going to be like Atari is right now. Everything's 50 cents.
It's going to plummet down to like 75 cents.
Oh, yeah. All the Zoomers are just like, why would I ever want this?
So is there any other way that you guys, outside of the things that they've recommended, that you use to help you tackle your backlog?
Actually, so I have weird taste with games. So if it comes down to a game that everyone like seems to love and has universal praise, I probably haven't played it. So I can look through like the more like common games and be like, oh, I should get around to this. Like next year, one of my game lists is like Luigi's Mansion. It's just a game I never got around to. So like if it's a series that's beloved, I'm sitting here playing Arizonk in the meantime. So
no, it's most about feel. You know, if I'm looking through, if I'm tired of all the stuff that I'm playing and I'm like, oh, OK, you know, I did purchase this game. I've been wanting to play it. It's that whole like, should I invest my time in this? Or am I going to get disappointed? And that's kind of why I tend to gravitate more towards stuff that I know well and I'm experienced with, because I know what kind of joy that I'm going to get out of that, be it a TV series, a movie, or a video game. And trying to get myself to invest my time into something new, I don't know what the outcome of that is going to be. So it's risky for me. And I'd say as I get older, I'm more careful about how I spend my time with that.
I think my tactic has been, so when I first got into collecting, it was, you know, I wanted to have a complete NES collection, complete Genesis collection, whatever. Mm-hmm. And I realized pretty early on that there were games that I would probably never touch. Magic Darts is an example of a game. I just don't care. Don't need to play Magic Darts. So why would I own that game? And so that's what I started doing, was limiting. I like sold off a lot of those games from my collection, use it as like trade bait. And now my whole thing is if I'm going to purchase a game, I need to know that it's something that I would want to play. So often what I'm doing is I'm looking up games to see if it's something that I'd be interested in, like watching a Let's Play or just something quick, you know, going through like the list of stuff that's out there. And if it's interesting to me, I'll check it out. I also watch a lot of Twitch streams to see what other people are playing to get a better idea of what games I want to pick up. But honestly, at the end of the day, if it doesn't spark joy for me, I'm probably not going to buy it, which, you know, at the end of the day, too, my collection isn't as big as a lot of people for that reason. But I know that at least if, you know, on a rainy day, I'm feeling one particular game, I can plug it in and at least say to myself, it's not like I'm rolling the dice and saying this is going to be a crap game. I know I'm going to have some enjoyment. So,
and that's not a bad thing, because a lot of people do that. They don't want to have their shelves full of games that they're never going to play. You know, there's a game sitting on my shelf right now, Wayne's World for the NES, which I got a couple weeks ago, and that game is freaking horrible.
Atrocious.
One of the biggest pieces of dog crap I've ever seen or played. And I don't know why this game is as expensive as it is. I know it's because it was probably at the end of the run of the Nintendo Entertainment System, but still, that doesn't mean the price of it should be through the roof. I'm probably going to use that as trade bait or sell it off when I go to PRGE in October. But I'm starting to become more like you, where I'm not going out there and grabbing an entire NES collection or an entire SNES collection. I'd rather have the games that, you know, I think are fun, and that's it. All right, before we move on, let's take a quick break to talk about our sponsor. This segment is proudly sponsored by the Elitist Podcast. It's a show where three friends and occasional guests play games about video games, including trivia, game show games, and more. Here is this week's trivia question. Ladies and gentlemen, start your engines. The original NES Super Mario Bros. Was one of 17 games released at the launch of the console. Here's another fun fact. The programming engine used to make Mario run was originally developed for use in another NES launch title. Guess which one? Tune into the Elitist Podcast this Wednesday to hear the answer. You can find the Elitist on your favorite podcast platform, and we'll also have their links in the show notes. Ryan, do you know the answer?
Of course I know the answer.
Of course you know the answer. Of course you do.
I didn't get it right when I guessed it, so if that makes you feel any better.
So my, I think that Mario Brothers was a launch title for the NES, I think.
It wasn't one of the original 17?
It was not. Okay.
Yeah, it wasn't the 17 black box games.
Was Mach Rider a launch game? Was that a black box?
It was, yes.
I might go Mach Rider just for like the smooth scrolling.
It is not Mach Rider, but I like where your head's at, and you're actually closer than you think.
Ah.
Redacted.
Yes, it is.
Redacted.
I'll be
I learned something today. I got to give a quick shout to those boys over Delete Us, too. They just recently had us on, and it's a great time on that show. So if you haven't checked it out yet, everyone out there definitely should.
Absolutely.
All right, fellow kids, zip up your Adidas jacket, log out of that AOL chat room, spritz on some cool water or Curve, make sure your Chevy Cavalier has gas and your virtual pet has batteries, because where we're going, you're going to need them. This is the Retro Rewind for September 1997. The hot music on the Billboard 100 charts, we had Mo' Money, Mo' Problems by the Notorious B.I.G. Quit Playing Games with My Heart by Backstreet Boys. I'll Be Missing You by Faith Evans and Puff Daddy. Of course, they're talking about the Notorious B.I.G., who was killed earlier that year. Two Become One by Spice Girls. How Do I Live by Leanne Rimes. Semi-Charmed Life by Third Eye Blind. Barbie Girl by Aqua.
You don't like that song?
I hate that freaking song. And it recently it started coming back for some odd reason. I don't know why. I don't know how. But it just needs to die and go away and never be heard again.
Just blame TikTok. It's always TikTok.
I think that's right. That's where I heard it.
I used to troll my training classes on Monday, right before class is about to end, I would turn on Aqua's Barbie Girl and they'd be like, no.
Never Make a Promise by Drew Hill, You Make Me Wanna by Usher, and Not Tonight by Little Kim. How many times have I heard that before? Out at the theaters, LA Confidential, which I still haven't seen, In and Out, The Game, The Full Monty, Soul Food, The Peacemaker, The Edge, Fire Down Below, I think there's a cream for that, Wishmaster, and 1,000 Acres. And there's a lot of movies with the right there. The Edge, The Peacemaker, The Full Monty, The Game, the.
I will say, out of all those that you just picked, I think The Game is probably my favorite one.
The Game with Michael Douglas, correct?
Yes, correct.
That is a super messed up movie, and it actually prompted another type of online game called Majestic back in the late 90s, early 2000s, where it had some of those elements. So
really?
You provided, oh my God, yes. Look up Majestic game from like 1999. You would provide your AOL screen name, like maybe an email address and a phone number if you had it. And like people would like pop up in AOL and just like, hey, like they'll send you information. It was like almost like a treasure hunt type thing. And it would start to freak you out. So they tried to do that. It didn't really fare well, but I thought it was a great concept.
Well, you've been given all your personal info on AOL, wasn't it?
If only I knew then what I do now.
We were trusting souls back then.
Absolutely.
I believed every ASL that was sent my way.
In the news, Mother Teresa dies at 85. Rest in peace. Mm-hmm. The 14th MTV Video Music Awards happened with Jamiroquai, Jewel, and Beck taking some trophies there. The funeral for Princess Diana is held in Westminster Abbey. Ally McBeal premieres on Fox. Google.com is registered as a domain name.
Wow.
Mark McGwire signs with the St. Louis Cardinals. And Microsoft releases Internet Explorer 4.
Is that a soft spot or a sore spot, rather, for you when Mike McGwire signed on for the St. Louis Cardinals?
No, not at all. I loved it back then. And then subsequently the next year, he would beat Roger Maris's home run record. So it was really great for baseball, aside from the whole steroid usage and everything like that. which that's a whole other topic.
Yeah, a little steroids.
Bring it back. Bring back steroids. It was so much more fun back then. I don't care about integrity. I want to see dingers.
Yeah, they're entertainers. Why do we care what they're doing? They're not role models, so who cares?
Exactly. Just playing a game.
Right. Who cares?
My name is Big Al, and I hate dingers.
Castlevania Symphony of the Night is on the cover of this month's GamePro and earns 5.0 ratings across the board in graphics, sound, control, and fun factor. Tomb Raider 2 is on EGM and Final Fantasy VII is on EGM2, respectively. And this is when things were so big with the gaming industry, with magazines, that EGM had two magazines going because there's so much content. What are your memories of Symphony of the Night? Hit us up on Gamers Week PC to let us know your fond memories of this game. In video game news, Sega prepares to release new hardware after the Saturn. Acknowledging that Sega had burned bridges with consumers after its two frequent hardware introductions, the nefarious 32X and Sega CD spring to mind, a spokesperson indicated that the company would still support Saturn owners with new games. However, there was no word yet on whether the new system will also play Saturn titles. Spoiler alert, it does not.
The beauty of hindsight.
GT Interactive buys Singletrack, who developed Twisted Metal, Warhawk, and Jet Moto. EA merges with Maxis. They were the makers of the classic SimCity games. The 3DO company recently completed the sale of its hardware business to Samsung, scoring $20 million for the deal. The agreement means that the 3DO is out of hardware for good now and will focus on developing games for the PC and PlayStation.
Shocker.
One of the questions asked in this month's GamePro was, can you use Zelda 64 with a vibrator? And GamePro's answer was, whoa, settle down there, sex machine. The vibrator you're talking about is called a rumble pack. But as far as swinging your sword, do whatever floats your boat. Just make sure no one else is around.
Wow, all the innuendos from EGM. Good
that was
for
like
them.
A drive-by.
Right?
It was the 90s. I could get away with it. What was hot at E3? For the N64, it was Banjo-Kazooie, GoldenEye 007, Conker's Quest, NFL Quarterback Club 98, WCW vs. NWO World Tour, Major League Baseball featuring Ken Griffey Jr., San Francisco Rush, Star Fox 64, and Zelda 64, which, of course, we all know went on to be Ocarina of Time.
Did you just say Conker's Quest? Was that the original working title?
I did say Conker's Quest. That might be Conker's Bad Fur Day.
It's got to be because it's on the N64. So it's
wasn't that
be.
When it was still like supposed to be like kid friendly too?
Probably. That went downhill quick.
Oh, it was canceled.
Wait oh, so this is a sequel to Conker's Bad.
Yeah,
Fur
it was
Day.
Called Conker's Quest: 12 Tales. And yeah, there's an article on it, but apparently it was canceled. So, huh? I didn't know that.
Might have to do a gaming history 101 on
that. Yeah, let's check to see if there's enough meat on that bone to bring something out.
Giggity.
For the PlayStation, it was Final Fantasy VII, Star Wars: Masters of Teras Kasai. Ugh.
Oof.
MK Mortal Kombat.
Is that the game everyone rented? I think everyone rented that at one point or another.
Yes, I was guilty of renting it. And I remember reading one of the EGM magazines for that game. I was like, oh, Star Wars, a fighting game. Great, I'll check this. No, it was a piece of crap. Mortal Kombat Anthology Sub-Zero, Street Fighter EX Plus, Oddworld Abe's Odyssey, Crash Bandicoot 2, Metal Gear Solid, Wild Nines, and Resident Evil 2. And for the Saturn, Last Bronx, Bomberman, Quake, Duke Nukem 3D, Sonic R, Marvel Super Heroes, and the Street Fighter Collection. Games released this month were Batman and Robin for the Saturn, Bomberman 64, Breath of Fire 3 for the PlayStation, Bushido Blade for the PlayStation, Don Don Patchy for the Saturn, Fantastic Four for the PlayStation, Frogger, Front Mission 2, Madden 98 all for the PlayStation, Marvel Super Heroes for the PlayStation and Sega Saturn, Maximum Force for the PlayStation, Mega Man X4 for the Saturn, Pandemonium 2 and Parappa the Rapper for the PlayStation, and last but not least, Ultima Online.
You know, it's funny about Bomberman 64 is I still remember the jingle from the commercial. It was done in the Spider-Man tune, so you know, like Spider-Man. But it was Bomberman, Bomberman, mass destruction across the land.
8 new levels to explore on Nintendo 64. Look out, here comes a Bomberman.
Wow, let's get an applause for RGB on that one.
You want to talk about earworms? Holy crap.
That's
I just can't believe that I remember that. And, you know, last time I saw the commercials, what it was new.
That's going to be singing me to sleep tonight. Well, that wraps up our retro rewind for this week. Thank you so much for hopping in the time machine and taking a look back at what used to be. We'll see you back in the present. Oh, and if your parents are looking into investing in the dot-com boom, tell them to go heavily on Ask Jeeves. Thank you for listening to episode 38 of Gamers Week Podcast, and a big thank you to the Retro Game Club Podcast, the Elitist Podcast, and Love Retro BTW for sponsoring this episode. If you want to connect with Gamers Week, follow us on Twitter at GamersWeekPC. Email us at GamersWeekPodcast@gmail.com. Visit our merch store at gamers-week-podcast.creator-spring.com. Or if you want to do it the easy way, follow the link in the show notes. Join us on Patreon at patreon.com/gamersweek. And finally, since you made it all the way to the end of this episode, please leave us a rating and review to let us know how we did. We really do value your feedback. And while you're there, consider subscribing on iTunes, Spotify, and your podcast platform of choice. Jim, thank you very much for filling in and being a guest host with us tonight. Why don't you go ahead and tell all of our listeners where they can find you?
Once again, guys, thank you so much for having me on. We would love to have you, all of you, on our show, including Bloop. So we'll definitely have to set that up to do that later in the year. Twitter, at a beer and a game. YouTube, drink a beer, play a game. Drink a beer, play a game on Instagram and Facebook. But Facebook, meh. Website, drinkabeerandplayagame.com. So that's where you can go and find all of like our written beer reviews, because just beer reviews don't do anything on YouTube. So it's way better just to sit down and read those. Brian from our page is actually doing a lot of Oktoberfest beers. So he's going to be banging out about like 15 reviews in the next month. So definitely make sure to check us out over there. And of course, our podcast, The Power Hour. I would heavily suggest just going to our socials and finding the podcast there, because calling a beer podcast The Power Hour is terrible for SEO. So just look us up there. You'll find us pretty much easily, unless you want to write Drink a Beer, Play a Game, The Power Hour podcast. So, and of course, if you enjoy our stuff, we do have a Patreon where we have exclusive videos, exclusive podcast episodes, game review requests, movie review requests, all kinds of different stuff. So check us out there. We respond to basically everything. So leave comments, hit us up on the socials. You know, we'll respond.
And as a patron myself of your lovely Patreon, I definitely will confirm that you guys are awesome. So,
We really do appreciate that too, Ryan. Thank you. Oh, and also speaking Discord, we finally started a Discord. So, if you're into Discords, make sure to check the links and all of our stuff to find us over there. Got a nice little community in there. Ryan's a part of it, so he can definitely tell you some shenanigans going on over there. But it's a fun time.
Absolutely.
The meme page gets spicy, so.
Well, check them out, guys and girls, and I guarantee you won't be disappointed. Have a good night, everybody.
Good night.
Cheers, guys. That sucked because it didn't work.
Welcome to Gamers Week Uncut.
Welcome to Gamers Week Uncut.
Welcome to Gamers Week Uncut, patrons with benefits. This is the unscripted, patron-only bonus cast with less editing and more dirty jokes. We don't know where the conversation will go, but we're sure it will be weird.
This fish just went right on my nipple. And I'm just like...
I Google Street Fighter 6. The first search result that comes up is people think they can see Ryu's in the Street Fighter 6 reveal.
Listen up here, kids. You're not going to want to get one of those VDSTDs things, right? Make you fall off. When you go, grab a pro. You'll be doing it for America.
That was perfect.
If you want to hear weekly episodes of our patron-only bonus cast, join us at patreon.com/gamersweek.